The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Wednesday morning, and welcome to another edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station, the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM, with yours truly, Neville James. It is a gorgeous day in paradise. You know what I'm saying? Really lovely outside for sure. A little cloudy, partly cloudy, but nice. Check what I'm saying. So we got a great show coming up on. We're going to be talking about the water service in a little bit. Dr. Hall is going to be joining me, UVA president, at the bottom of the hour because we got a senator here in the mix, here in the territory right about now. U.S. Senator Raphael Warnock from out of Georgia. He's here. So we're going to talk a little bit about his connections with the senator. Dwayne Henry, going to probably comment around 8:10 because we wanted to talk a little bit about yesterday's primaries, in particular the one in Wisconsin. That's important as well. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I believe we got the weather service on the line right now. So let's talk with one of the meteorologists from down there in San Juan. Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, this is Ryan Chambers.
Hey, Ryan. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. How was your Easter weekend?
It was pretty nice. Pretty nice. Worked. But it was lovely.
And the weather's been nice, man.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. It's been pretty good. And it's going to get even nicer, a bit hotter.
Yeah, but check this out. We've been getting some breezes during the evening. What's up with that? What causes that? The moon?
Yeah, we definitely with the land heating up throughout the day, it brings that good sea breeze. And yeah, it's been holding on throughout the evening hours. And we've had good high pressure at the surface across the Atlantic north of us. So that has just sustained windy conditions throughout these days.
We were supposed to have we had a cold front or at least the fringes of it last week, right?
Yes, we did.
And it's still hanging around a little bit.
A little bit at the moment, though. It's being pushed out by some dry air that's moving into the region, and so we're actually going to see a rapid drying trend throughout the next couple days, and we're actually going to see warmer temperatures because the positioning of the high-pressure system in the Atlantic, it's going to cause the winds to turn to the southeast. And so we're looking towards a warmer pattern, if anything. So, yeah, the effects of the cold front is kind of a bit over.
Now, the dry season in these parts is ending right about now, right?
I would say that we're kind of heading towards some of the drier months that we may experience this year.
Interesting.
Because it seems like the beginning of the summer, it is quite dry before tropical season starts.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we'll start seeing the waves of Saharan dust that will continue to promote dry weather.
Now, the tropical weather outlook that starts May 15th, right? The middle of May, before the hurricane season starts on June 1?
Exactly. Yeah, June 1st.
Okay, good.
And then we'll...
Yeah. Now, let's talk marine conditions for the region leading into the weekend and all that good stuff.
Yes. So marine conditions are improving. We still are going to have some northerly swell in the water. Over the weekend, a long period swell is coming in. The height of it won't be too impressive, though. So we may observe just a high risk of rip currents for, say, northern USVI. But for the outer waters, and things will be pretty calm because the wind will be calm throughout the weekend and for the rest of the week. And, like, beginning on Thursday into Friday through the weekend, wind speeds will really decrease. And so that will make for lovely boating conditions. And with them, the swell is pretty weak, so that won't cause too much of a threat of breaking waves on the coastlines. So, this weekend looks pretty good for being out on the waters. Nothing too hazardous.
That's good. Now, what about precipitation?
Yes. So with the dry air that's moving in right now, we're not expecting too much rainfall over the next few days. However, into the weekend, when the winds, they turn more southerly by, like, say, Saturday, we could expect some passing showers to increase. But for today, tomorrow, and Friday, it does look to be kind of dry.
Okay, good. So the weekend's going to be okay in these parts, then. That's pretty much what you're saying.
Yeah, it should be nice. It should be hot. It'll be warm with the way that the wind is. And as it's going to lift moisture across the area, we could have an increase of showers. So just warmer with more showers. So it might be a little moist, like higher RH values, or that's a relative humidity values. So, it might be a little warmer, a little stickier out, but doesn't look too bad. Looks nothing crazy.
Okay, good. Now, quickly, in closing, they're looking at 2024 as a La Nina year. What does that mean for us in principle?
That means that there will be a better chance of tropical cyclone development in the Atlantic Basin. More organization among the storms that do form.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means for us is that we just have a bit of a higher chance of experiencing effects from storms that do form.
No, last year, a lot of the storms were veering off to the north before they got to the archipelago, which is a good thing. We like it like that. And they were moving off to the north, and actually north and then east. So they weren't even getting to the Bahamas. Ian was telling me that typically there's a ridge that keeps the storms more on a southern, a western trajectory. And then before they go northwest, which is the typical pattern. In this case, they were going more north, northwest and north and not west before they got to the archipelago. Was last year an aberration for the most part?
It's hard for me to say exactly because I've only been in this region for 2 years now.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen the setup of the surface size to us, but I can say that we definitely were spared a lot of times last season.
Oh, yes.
Because the positioning of the surface high in the Atlantic was causing those storms to swerve with the trajectory of going north of us and then even dodging the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they said, so last year was an El Nino year?
Yeah.
And this year is slated or looking to be a La Nina year.
Yes, it's heading towards that way.
Okay. Yep. Rand Chambers from out of San Juan. Nice talking to you this morning, man.
You too. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, looking forward to talking with you again. Be good. That's Mr. Rand Chambers, meteorologist from down there in San Juan. I always keep your eye out, right? Don't forget, we're getting into a transitional period now with the weather. It looks like an extended dry season, right? I thought the dry season would end late March, April, but Ryan said that there's a likelihood we're going to run a little longer, right? And then before, we typically get some April showers, and some main rain as well. You know what I'm saying? So we're going to see what's going on before the Sahara dust kick in. And it was the Sahara dust that actually introduced me to Tykamil Hunziza. Because remember we had that, what do you call it? Godzilla. We had a Godzilla Sahara dust roll in here in 2020, right? And so I called my good friend Daryl Jashin, right? And over there at the Vitima. And he set up a nice conversation and got Department of Health in there. And that's how we learned a lot about the Sahara dust impact, you know. So keeping an eye on that, because that could do damage, you know what I'm saying, because it could affect people's breathing and all that stuff, right? Godzilla, Sahara dust. Let me pull that up. Godzilla, Sahara dust. Okay. That was either in 2020 or 2021. Okay, yeah, 2020. Yeah, around July. It was a monster, you know what I'm saying? So we looking at that one there again. Dwayne Henry supposed to be calling in. Are you on already? Good morning, Counselor. Glad to get you on again.
Sir,
this morning.
How are you?
Good. Yeah, I wanted to get you on. Well, first of all, we're keeping an eye. You were actually at the Department of Health around that time when that Godzilla Sahara dust rolled into the region and literally were covering the entire archipelago.
Yes.
I could hardly hear you.
Yeah, I'm here. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I could hear you, but not as loud as I normally do.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one, and that's how I got to. That was my introduction to Tykamil Hunziza, because she was speaking about. It was in June of 2020,
uh-huh.
Right? And
yes.
It impacted, when it left here, it actually went to America and impacted America as well.
Listen, it was horrible because, you know, I have asthma and I was laid out for days at a time. A couple of other people I knew got sick really bad. And it just, like, hung over us. For days,
man. Yeah, uh-huh. And that was during COVID. The height of COVID, man.
It was like, you know, you're dealing with COVID, and then you got this, you know.
Yeah, it was
pretty bad. But
that's like a
that
was like an advanced placement calculus for dealing with how human beings are impacted by the atmosphere, man. Wow.
Yeah. It's really and you know, people got to pay attention because, you know, they got dengue outbreak in Puerto Rico.
That's right.
So far so good here.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you get that and then you get the environmental agitants like Sahara dust and stuff, it could be ugly for some people, you know, vulnerable people with COPD or elderly people with compromised pulmonary systems and stuff like that.
So check this out. This thing was in June of 2020, right? And in October of last year, which is 3 years and 4 months later, right?
Uh-huh.
Environmental professors investigate the atmospheric effects of June 2020 Godzilla dust storm, right? So 40 months later, you know, right?
Uh-huh.
And they say every year, dust from the Saharan dust is transported across the Atlantic Ocean to North America. These dust events can affect air quality, climate, weather, and both land and water-based ecosystems. Models suggest that the frequency and intensity of these Saharan dust events will increase in the future due to changes in land use and weather patterns. This makes it critical to identify the occurrence and understand the impact of these dust events. First of all, the idea that a dust storm could travel all the way from the Saharan Desert across the Atlantic Ocean and still hold together and impact us in the Caribbean and on the Eastern Seaboard is amazing.
It is amazing because, you know, it is dirt and it should be heavy and fall. But the fact that it's so light, the particles are so light, that they're able to stay airborne. And then, you know, with the strong winds, we got those easterly winds that, the trade winds and stuff like that. And those winds come off of Africa. That's what blows the hurricanes this way.
Mm-hmm.
And, so with those winds and stuff, you know, between the wind and the lightness of the particles, they're able to come across. And then they also attach themselves to clouds. You know, so you'll see,
you know,
clouds help carry pollutants.
We tend to take the natural elements for granted, but it really is an awesome dynamic in our existence, you know. Seriously, yeah.
You know, like I explained, I have asthma. You know, a significant amount of people that have asthma or allergies. I have allergies too.
Mm-hmm.
I have some food allergies, but most of the significant number is environmental.
Yes,
it's not like, you know, You eat something and you take hay fever. That's all of it. That's dust mite,
mm-hmm.
Hay fever for pollen, all that stuff. It's in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just shut down my house and run AC almost 24/7 because
we had Nourish the Flourish a couple of weeks ago. Holly Goroff, she lives in North Carolina. She was talking about the pollen and the impact on her. You know what I'm saying? So.
You know, I lived in North Carolina for 16 years, and it was horrible.
Wow.
When they have the national tree, or the state tree, is the dogwood.
Mm-hmm. The dogwood.
This heavy, this thing is so heavy that when it rains, the rain is yellow running down the street.
Mm-mm.
When that dogwood thing, forget about it. You got to walk around with a mask.
No, they said in June 2020, there was an especially large dust event, so big that it was called the Godzilla dust storm in some media reports. The dust from this storm was observed as far north as Michigan and as far west as Texas. And it was especially intense in Puerto Rico and other parts of the Caribbean. Now, I know the trend for movies nowadays is Godzilla and King Kong walking together, right?
Yeah.
But we had it down here because if the Sahara dust was Godzilla, then COVID was King Kong.
Right. You're dealing with two monsters.
We're dealing with two monsters at the same time, man. You know what I mean? So, wow. Yeah, this is interesting. Check this out. We're going to go for a break. When we come back, I wanted to run through yesterday's primaries. We had primaries in New England, right? We had Rhode Island, Connecticut. I also had one in New York. But the one I really want to focus on is Wisconsin. Okay, you know, that's a big state. That one that determined that, along with Michigan, Pennsylvania, and now Georgia and Arizona, those swing states, those purple states, typically determine who's going to do well. And I want to break down those numbers as well. So we got Dwayne Henry joining me. He's going to be on for another 10 minutes. And then UVA President David Haas is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. It's a lovely day in paradise. We'll take a break. A hump day edition of Analyze This. Be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTGX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX TV, Channel 12.
We're back here, Analyze This. Of course, you know, Tuesdays up until about June, you're going to have at least one primary on the mainland. And so we like to do a little breakdown. Of course, you know, we had Super Tuesday 4 weeks ago. And then we had another Super Tuesday too a week later. I got my friend Dewey Henry joining me here. Good morning once again, Counselor. Glad.
Good morning.
So let me run through these real quick and then get to Wisconsin. Right, Rhode Island, typically a blue state. Right? They had a primary yesterday. Trump got 84.4%. Haley got 10.7%. And uncommitted and DeSantis got 2.0%. They had a total of 12,707 primary voters on the Republican side. Right? So the things that we're looking for is what percent in voting for the presumptive nominee, right?
12% voted against
Trump. Yeah, 12% there, right? So for Rhode Island, on the Democratic side, you had Biden, 20,989, 82.6%. Uncommitted, 3,752 at 14.9% in Rhode Island, right?
Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah, and then you had Dean Phillips, 646 votes, 2.6%, and they had a total of 25,257. So their total doubled, right? The amount of Republican voters that came out. So that's the reason why we look at that as a blue state. However, Trump did get a greater percentage of who came out to vote at 84.4% to Biden's 82.6%, right? But in Rhode Island, it looks like in the end, the volume, right, gonna be the determining factor in favor of Biden, even though you had 17.4% who didn't vote for Biden as opposed to 15.6% who didn't vote for Trump. If you add up Haley and the uncommitted along with on the red side and Phillips and the uncommitted on the blue side. So that one pretty much going to remain the same. Now in Connecticut, right? Trump had 34,760 votes, but his percentage was 77.9%.
Right.
Haley got 6,220. Her vote was 13.9%. So that was 3% more than Rhode Island. And then uncommitted got 4.8%. Right. At 2,162, you had 44,636 voters participating in the Republican primary. On the Democratic side, Biden got 55,367, and he got 84.8%, which is about 6.9% more than Trump did on the Republican side. Uncommitted again, 11.5%, right? 7,492, and Marianne Williamson, she got 2.3%, 1,501. Again, the volume favors the blue side, right? They got 65,250 total voters participating in Connecticut. About, I'd say, 50% more than on the Republican side, where they had 44,636. So even though you're looking at these non-Biden percentage, which in this case was 15.2, and on the Republican side, it was 22.1. It's still a volume thing in Connecticut, where the blue side, the turnout, voter registration, tending to favor the blue side. Now, New York, right? New York was interesting, Dwayne. And I want your take on this. New York, given all the protests that's been going on with respect to the American position in the conflict with Hamas and IDF, right? Israel and Palestine. Biden got 91.5% of the vote in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have any uncommitted on the ballot, it looked like. So you had Phillips at 3.6%. And you had, let me see.
Nice for
Marianne
Williamson.
Yeah, okay, no, I got the percentage wrong here. I got to correct that. Marianne Williamson she's at 4%?
She's 4.9.
4.9, okay, yeah.
No, you had Dean Phillips corrected.
I had her wrong. I had her at 3.6 though, and it couldn't have been because she got 4,000 more votes than Phillips, right?
Right.
And on the Republican side, Trump got 82.1%, 131,612. But again, Nikki Haley at 12.9%.
Mm-hmm.
And uncommitted at 4.0%. No, Chris Christie at 4.0%.
Yes.
Vivek Ramaswamy at 1,624, 1%. You had 160,387 Republican participants in New York, 302,458 in New York. Again, Trump been saying, I believe we could be competitive in New York. You know, that's just he talking, running to his mouth. Based on these numbers here, ain't got no competition going on in New York.
No. New York is going to go to the Democrats.
Yeah.
Because
Biden not only got a higher volume, he also got a higher percentage at 91.5% to 82.1%. Now, let me go to Wisconsin, my brother. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin had more people voting in their primary yesterday than New York, Connecticut, and Rhode Island combined.
Right.
They had over 1.17 million people participating in their primary yesterday. You know why? Apparently, it had two questions on the ballot.
Yes. That's the question two, I think. No, question one was the one with private funding.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know why they did that? That's the Republican name, because Mark Zuckerberg had outspent everybody and he wasn't even on the ballot last time.
But those questions on the ballot, right? The turnout was humongous. And when we break it down, Trump got 79.2% in Wisconsin. Biden get 88.6% on the Democratic side. The Democratic side, right? And you actually had more people voting in the Republican primary in Wisconsin than on the Democratic side. And Biden still got 34,000 more votes than Trump did. Why? Yeah. Because Nikki Haley got 76,149 votes in the Republican primary, Dwayne.
And between her and DeSantis is basically 100,000.
95, votes. Let me say, bam, 96,000 votes, right? But Biden got something to worry about as well. There were 47,846 uncommitted votes on the Democratic side. Wow.
Yeah, they call it uninstructed or something.
Uninstructed, that's the term they use. And then Dean Phillips still garner 17,533, which confirms, Dwayne, the public would rather these two distinguished gentlemen not run for re-election.
Yeah, I agree.
And the problem is, it's too late now. The delegates done locked up. A lot of money is being spent and raised. But we're going to keep an eye on this Wisconsin thing here, man.
I think Biden's going to win Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They think the Republicans think they're going to flip it back, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to hold Wisconsin.
Look, this got to be a good sign for the blue team if they're watching this, yeah, that they could get 34,000 more votes.
Mm-hmm.
The presumptive nominee, that is Biden,
right,
than Trump, and you had about 25,000 less total people participating in a vote in the election. That's a staggering number. So we're just breaking that down. I'll get back with you again next week. We'll look at what primary coming up next week, and I'll be in touch. Thank you very much, sir.
Appreciate it. Take care, sir.
Okay, you got it. Okay. Yeah. So these numbers here are interesting, and of course, you know, the campaigns will continue to heat up as we head into the latter part of the spring, and then we're heading towards the conventions and all that good stuff. Now we're going to transition. We got the University of Virgin Islands president, the one and only David Hall, joining us this morning. Good morning, kind sir. Glad to have you on to analyze this once again.
Good morning to you and all of your listeners, and I'm honored and glad to be with you again.
Okay, good. So, first of all, how you been, man? How was Easter?
It was wonderful. A blessing for sure. Time with family and time with the Lord. So I'm inspired as we go forward. How was yours?
You could ditto me on that, man. You know what I'm saying? It was nice. You know, as you age, because yo, I just want you to know, right, that I'm coming towards you. I got to 60. You know, I'm city now. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting up there. You know what I'm saying? So, with each holiday, each birthday, you're just glad to be here and enjoying life and being grateful. You know what I'm saying?
No doubt that's what this is about. We have a lot to be grateful for, and I certainly feel that way.
Without a doubt. Now, second question. So the family's good. Everybody's good.
Everybody's well.
Okay,
everybody.
Now your weekly family at UVA, how they doing? How's UVA doing? How's the college doing?
UVA is doing well, and this has been an exciting week for us. Today we have Senator Raphael Warnock, who is going to be our distinguished student convocation speaker at 1 o'clock in the Sports and Fitness Center, and we are inviting the community, those who can, to come out and hear from him, hear from our students. We have some student leaders who will be speaking and performing, but it's really a rare opportunity to have Senator Warnock with us. So UVI is excited about that and about a lot of other things that are on the horizon.
Talk about this relationship. How'd you get the hookup with a U.S. senator from Georgia? Because he has a history with the University of Virgin Islands. How'd that happen?
Yes, and it goes back before he was senator. After the hurricanes, my wife and I, we went to various cities trying to raise funds for our students and employees because we were concerned about the buildings, but the immediate concern was to support our students and staff who had been greatly affected by the hurricanes. And our alums in the Atlanta area hosted an event, a fundraiser. But we decided to also go to Ebenezer because Reverend Warnock is the pastor. He's a senator, but he's also the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, the historic home of Dr. Martin Luther King. And we just shared with him what was going on. And of course, people had heard about the hurricane and the damage. So he first invited me to meet with him and explain in greater detail what was going on. And then during the service, he invited me to come up and share some remarks about what was happening in the Virgin Islands and at the university. And the church took up a significant contribution for UVI. And that became a part of our UVI Rise Fund, allowed us to help out students and employees. We bought generators, food, battery, et cetera, with those funds. And so we stayed in touch with him after that. And then when he became, when he ran for Senate and won, we invited him to serve as our commencement speaker. This was in 2021. Unfortunately, it was during COVID, so we weren't having in-person graduations. And he spoke to us virtually from his church in Atlanta. And we awarded him an honorary degree, had to send it in the mail because couldn't put it around him, couldn't put the hood on him. But during that time, I indicated to him that we would make up for the fact that he was not able to actually come and speak to our students and be with our students. So we have continued to communicate since that time, and we finally was able to get it into his schedule, and we are just so honored that he is going to be with us today.
UVA and David Hall, like we say down in these parts, you ain't no Johnny come lately as it relates to your relationship with Warnock. Your relationship predated him being elected in 2020, and he actually won in a runoff in January.
Yeah.
And actually, that was the day before J6. that was wild. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So him and I believe Ossoff, right? That's his name, John Ossoff. They made history. On January 5th, actually, turned Georgia red to purple, and as it relates to the results, it turned out to be blue as it relates to the U.S. Senate. And I got to give him credit because of his election, it was a special election. He actually had to run back and defend the seat in 2022, and he did that. So my man's doing good, man. That's good. So
he is, but the good news is that he has remained the same person I knew.
Oh, that's good. That's better news, not just good news. That's better news. Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
Is involved in a whole lot of things, but is just a very humble servant. He really fits the mold of Dr. King and using spirituality and religion as a source and catalyst for social change and for social justice. He is a strong advocate for people and our needs, and yet he is able to mingle with and be with the President of the United States and other senators. So
that's a good thing.
And the other personal note is that we are both from Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, yeah?
He is a homeboy, different generation.
What's the terminology for Savannah? You Savannian? Is there a term for if you're from Savannah?
Savannian.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. What we're gonna do is we're gonna take a break. When we come back, and we'll talk about UVI. We'll talk about the student convocation, right? That's what's going on today, right?
Yes.
We'll talk about the significance of that. We got the university president, David Hall, joining us this morning. I analyze this. We'll take a break and be back right after this.
Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party, or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression, and you can thank Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Ah, sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Race is complicated. On Code Switch, we don't dumb it down for you.
And on Life Kit, we have advice on everything from money to mental health.
It's Code Switch and Life Kit from NPR.
Saturdays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM. FM.
And we're back here analyzing this, and we got the UVA president, the one and only David Hall, joining us this morning. Good morning once again, Mr. President. Glad to have you on.
Glad to be here.
Okay, good. Now, you mentioned this, Savannah, right? One of my nearest and dearest friends, she's actually relocated to Savannah because her daughter's attending, I believe it's the College of Art and Design.
Yes, Savannah.
Talk a little bit about Savannah, because she told me that there's some similarities with the Virgin Islands, not so much, you know, physical, the location, all that stuff, but now there's something about the close-knit nature of Savannah that is kind of similar to the Virgin Islands.
Well, I agree with her, and one of the reasons I felt so comfortable when I came to the Virgin Islands to serve as president is that it felt like home. There is a major focus on family and family connections. It is a city of deep faith. Nina Simone, the famous songstress, wrote the song Sunday in Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
The spirit of that song is, you know, on Sunday, everyone is in church. It's just, it's a core of the city. There's among African-American people, there's a deep connection to the history and the culture. It was a wonderful place to grow up. The schools we attended, people supported each other. Our teachers tried to instill a sense of excellence in us. And keep in mind, more so in my era than in Senator Warnock's, you know, segregation was everywhere during that time. And though we went to segregated schools, that created a greater mission among the teachers and coaches to get us to excel and prepare us to go out in the world and do great things. And I get that same sense of commitment to culture and to family and spirituality here in the Virgin Islands. So I agree with her. There is a strong connection. And Savannah is also on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And though growing up, we were precluded from going to the beach because of segregation.
Oh, man, for real?
That is real.
What?
We had to go to South Carolina to go swimming in the ocean.
I was going to mention South Carolina because Charleston and Savannah, the people kind of relate the two of them together.
Yes, and they're very close. A lot of exchange. My mother's side of the family was from South Carolina. Some of them lived in Charleston and mm-hmm. other small towns.
Yeah, I've been to Charleston. I went to Charleston in 2018, and there's certain parts of Charleston that makes you feel like you're in St. Croix, man.
Yes.
Yeah, they got a lot of the way they construct the buildings and all that stuff. You get a sense of, wait a minute, this looks kind of familiar.
Yeah, and the only reason we would go to South Carolina to go to the beaches is they were black-owned beaches.
Ah, man.
And so you had these black entrepreneurs who had bought property by the ocean, and therefore we could go there. And unfortunately, that was consistent with the segregation laws. As long as you were on a black-owned facility, then you were fine.
The Civil Rights Act changed that?
It certainly did, and it began to change that in my junior year. And one of the steps was we were, as you know, I'm a former athlete and basketball player.
Yeah.
We played in segregated leagues until my junior year when they created one league for all of the high schools in the state of Georgia to compete in. We were fortunate, my school, to win the state championship the first time that was allowed. And over time, and I think Senator Warnock was certainly the beneficiary of that, a lot of those things disappeared. But the legacy and vestiges of that system still remains in so many ways in regards to inequality and income disparity, health disparities, et cetera. But that was the era in which I grew up. And so one of the blessings of being in the Virgin Islands is seeing our people in political offices and as entrepreneurs and in control of what is happening in the lives of our people. And that has just been inspiring for me for the last 15 years.
Wow. Well, speaking of which, you're heading towards the sunset, man. At UVA.
Well,
is June or July?
It is July, but I'm going to have to come up with a different metaphor because the sun is not setting on UVI for the. I am going to do a sabbatical.
Okay, do a sabbatical. Okay, cool. Yeah.
And then I will come back and do some teaching in our PhD program for creative leadership. For innovation and change. The sun is not setting. It's just that the intense heat from being present is going to go down considerably.
I like that one. By the way, for those of you who are listening, you heard him mention that he played college basketball. David Hall was no slouch because I'm looking here at, I'm here on the college basketball sports reference. You averaged a double-double in college, Mr. President.
I did, yeah. at Kansas State
yeah,
University.
Man, you averaged 12.3 rebounds and 12.3 points and 10.1 rebounds for 3 years at Kansas State, man. You ain't no slouch, B. Wow. These kind of numbers nowadays, if you was playing in the NBA, you could get yourself a nice 3-year, 4-year, 15, $16 million contract per.
Yeah, sometimes we were born too early.
Nah, you served your purpose, my brother. You ain't got nothing to feel about. But this is nice, man. Kansas State, and then we spoke about this before, transitioning from the deep South, the segregated South, and then you went to out to the Midwest, out to the Plains.
This is correct, and that was quite a cultural shock.
Yeah,
and,
man. Yeah.
But I achieved the main goal that I went there for, and that was to obtain a college degree.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Congratulations.
Did that in 4 years while playing basketball, and it opened doors and created the platform for me to go on and obtain other degrees and to end up where I am right now.
Yeah, so, unfortunately for Kansas State, you went to college during the UCLA years when UCLA won everything. So, you know, I won't hold it against you. You know what I'm saying?
You should, but because we were in the Final Four era, one of the blessings of playing at that time is you could make it to the Elite Eight much easier.
Much easier, yeah, because you had buys and all that stuff in the first rounds, first and second rounds, right? First round, at least.
If you won your conference championship, which we did in my sophomore and senior year, you were automatically in the Sweet 16.
Wow.
And if you won one game, you were automatically in the
Elite Eight, playing for a chance to go to the Final Four. Wow.
Exactly. I was fortunate to be able to do that. So,
wow, man. That's
so
cool.
Each era has its upsides and downsides, but it was the pathway was a lot shorter during that time.
That's great. Now, quickly, the student convocation. Talk about the event, the purpose of it, and why it's so significant to have someone of the profile of a U.S. Senator Raphael Warnock gracing us here in the territory this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you for that. We started the Distinguished Student Convocation. We have our normal student convocation at the beginning of every year for new students coming in. But we started this tradition of having the Distinguished Student Convocation whenever we can secure individuals who we feel are national leaders at the highest level of whatever it is they are doing. And so our first Distinguished Convocation speaker was Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor, and then a couple of years later, former Attorney General Loretta Lynch was able to come and be with us. In both of those first two, we were able to work with Judge Wilma Lewis, who helped facilitate those for us. And so this is the third one we've been able to have, and to have a U.S. senator, the first African-American senator from the state of Georgia, and someone who has this other tradition of being, of walking in the footsteps of Dr. Martin Luther King and pastoring the church that was Dr. King's home, is just a special opportunity for our students to see that individuals who have come from very humble beginnings, as all three of these individuals have, can reach the height of their professions, and to do so with excellence and humility. And that's what we want to instill within our students. So they will not only hear from him, but at our student convocation, students get to ask questions of these individuals, and they will ask questions of Senator Warnock. We also have private meetings with the students and Senator Warnock. So it is really a rare opportunity for individuals, not just our students, but the community as well, to come and hear for someone who is not only eloquent, but is a sincere servant of people, of social justice, and of trying to create what Dr. King called the beloved community. So it is an honor to have him here. And as I said earlier, it's an even special honor that I have known him and we are from the same city.
No, that's awesome. Now, the students are receptive to the Sotomayors and the Lewises of the world when they come and just have a chat with them. That's pretty much what it is, right? Just having a good conversation, a quality conversation.
Exactly, and they are always excited about it. And because individuals of this level have very have limitations on their schedule, we couldn't orchestrate it so that the individuals could be on both campuses while they're here. So, for example, today we are flying over 23 student leaders from St. Croix who will be at the convocation, but will also get to meet with him. And so students get excited over the fact that they get to meet individuals of this prestige. And we are hoping that we have a good connection or a good combination of students and individuals in the community. So those who can come out, we ask you to please come to the Eldridge Blake Sports and Fitness Center, which is on the St. Thomas campus, and the event will start at 1 o'clock. If you're on St. Croix, or even if you're on St. Thomas but just can't come out, it will be live streamed, so you can go to the UVI Facebook page and listen to it or see it. And you could either go to the UVI YouTube page and you could listen and see him as well. And as I indicated earlier, we also try to highlight our students doing these events. So our student trustee, our student government leaders will also speak, and we have some students who will be performing in our jazz band and singing as well, because in addition to hearing from these distinguished individuals, we want them to hear from our students and to be impressed with the quality of students that we have here at the university.
Without a doubt, now you to be commended for that. So congratulations for establishing this this dialogue, right? This is annual dialogue, and it's a good thing. By the way, you know, going back to your basketball years, I keep forgetting that you were coached by two of the greats, Cotton Fitzsimmons and Jack Hartman, and people know Cotton because Cotton was a high-profile coach in the NBA, but Jack Hartman was a great college coach, and I learned about him at the age of about 7 or 8. No, let me see, 9 years old, because I was a big Walt Frazier fan, right? Yeah. And he's from Georgia like yourself, right? And he played at Southern Illinois, and Jack Hartman was his coach in his senior year. So, you've been rubbing shoulders with some bigwigs all along, Mr. President.
I was blessed to have two outstanding coaches. And the other thing you should know is that when I was being recruited to Kansas State, the coach was Tex Winter.
Oh my gosh. What's it, the triple post, whatever they call it?
Yeah, triple post.
Yeah.
Offense.
Yeah, Michael Jordan's offensive coach in Chicago Bulls. Wow. Wow.
So I wasn't coached by him, but Cotton took his offense with what he said, better players.
Can you do me a favor? Can you hold on for 1 minute? We go to a break so we can wrap up the conversation, because I don't want to excuse you like that, if it's okay with you. Can you hold on for 1 second, sir, so we can do the break?
No problem.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much. We got Mr. President David Hall joining us. We'll take a break, do a reset, top of the hour. Be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
As the news gets more complex and changes through the day, you need more than just a quick headline check. Here and Now keeps you connected to your world between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, as the news and the people shaping it are changing in real time. I'm Robin Young. Follow along on Here and Now, NPR News weekday afternoons.
From 2 to 4 on WTJX-FM, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.